Hello, and welcome back to the Fleet Navigator podcast, your go-to GPS for all things fleet-related. I'm Matthew Walters, and I'm thrilled again to be joined today by our specialist consultant, Dom Sirlis. Afternoon, Dom.
Hi, Matt.
So today we're going to be talking about something that's been widely discussed in the news over the last couple of months, and that's the expansion of the ultra-low emission zone in London. The ULEZ, as it's known, was introduced to some London boroughs in 2019. As of the 29th of August, this year, it's expanded to cover the whole city. But not everyone is happy about it. You may remember the recent by-election in Uxbridge caused by the resignation of Boris Johnson. The Labour Party was expected by many to take the seat, but instead the Conservative Party held it narrowly. Why? Both parties blamed anger at the extension, which has been driven through by the Labour Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. However, the coverage also revealed that a lot of people still don't understand what the ultra-low emission zone is and why it's been introduced and who will have to pay. That's why we'll be talking about that here today, to make sense of the changes and to explain how they'll affect you. And even if the changes don't directly affect you, then you might still want to listen because of the spread of clean air zones, or CASs, around the country, many of them modelled on London's ultra-low emission zone. Few fleets and motorists can afford to ignore what's happening in the capital. So what is the ULEZ, Dom?
Well, if you've ever had to travel in London, you'll know that there are a lot of vehicles on the road, really an awful lot. You'll also know that, quite apart from the congestion it causes, all this traffic has an impact on the air quality. The air in London is full of the oxides of nitrogen and microparticulates that come from vehicle tailpipes, and in some cases from tyres too. And that's not good news for our health. It makes things much worse for people with breathing problems like asthma, and longer term can lead to things like serious lung diseases, dementia, and even cancer. Something like 500,000 Londoners are at the greatest level of risk, which is why the ultra-low emission zone was developed. The idea was simple. Vehicles that didn't meet emission standards would have to pay to drive in the ULEZ. In other words, polluters pay, unless or until they changed to a vehicle that met the standards. The ULEZ began in central London, covering the same area as the existing congestion charging zone, and it was rolled out to cover inner London, that's the area within the North and South Circular roads, in 2021. It's important to note that the ULEZ is in operation for 24 hours a day, every day of the year, with just one exception. It does take a break on Christmas Day. Compliance with the scheme is monitored through automatic number plate recognition, ANPR, the data for which is harvested by daily and anonymous camera detections. Cross-checking this against DVLA records, TfL can monitor how well things are working and provide averages, whether daily or monthly, showing how many cars are compliant and how many are not meeting their targets. The data shows that only 1 in 10 cars is not compliant. So, which vehicles are affected by the ULEZ, Matt?
Which cars are compliant? What about other vehicles, right? So, basically, it comes down to European emission standards. These were first set back in 1992, and they've been revised 5 times since then, becoming more strict each time. Transport for London have based the ultra-low emission zone compliancy on these standards. So if they say a specific vehicle has to be Euro 3 compatible in certain chemical compounds to avoid the ULEZ charge, that means it can't exceed the rates of emission set out in the Euro 3 guidelines. This means that older vehicles are more likely to have to pay than newer models, since they were produced when emission standards were less stringent and thus they're more polluting. So let's see what this looks like in practice. We'll start with cars. So, Transport for London says that petrol cars have to reach Euro 4 standards for oxide of nitrogen, or NOx, in order to avoid the charge. Euro 4 standards were applied to all cars registered from the 1st of January 2006, so any petrol cars from after that date should be okay. However, diesel cars have to reach Euro 6 standards for NOx and particulate matter, or PM. Those came into force for new vehicles registered after September 2015, so anything older than that is likely to incur a charge. So what are the standards for the main vehicle types? Well, including the ones we just mentioned, so for petrol cars, it's Euro 4. For diesel cars, it's Euro 6. Petrol vans and minibuses, category 4 or Euro 4. Diesel vans and minibuses, Euro 6. Motorcycles and mopeds have to fall in Euro 3. And since the regulations came in a year later for vans and minibuses than they did for cars, that's vans first registered after January 06 for petrol and after 2016 for diesel. Motorbikes have an easier ride in London, forgive the pun. They only have to reach Euro 3 for NOx, which generally speaking means vehicles registered after January 2007. But before we go any further, we have to stress that the dates we've been mentioning are guides rather than scientifically specific. If a vehicle can prove that it can meet the relevant European emission standards, then it will be exempt from being charged in the ultra-low emission zone, even if it was registered before the standards officially came into force. But it's up to you to declare such vehicles to TfL or Transport for London. For the most part, charges or exemptions will be calculated simply by the vehicle's age. So what about larger vehicles? We haven't mentioned them so far. That's because they're a bit of a special case. Heavier vans, HGVs, buses and coaches, as well as specialist heavy vehicles such as road sweepers, bin lorries, removal lorries, etc., all have faced charges depending on their emissions under the separate low emissions zone scheme that has covered Greater London since 2008. Now that the ultra-low emission zone is being expanded to all of Greater London too, the low emission zone and the ULEZ will cover the same area, although larger vehicles will still have to satisfy the pre-existing LEZ standards. These are HGVs, lorries, vans or other specialist vehicles over 3.5 tonnes gross vehicle weight, as well as buses and coaches over 5 tonnes, have to be Euro 6 for NOx particulates and particulate matter. Goods vehicles above 1.205 tonnes unladen weight and not exceeding 3.5 tonnes gross vehicle weight, as well as buses and coaches not exceeding 5 tonnes, Euro 3 for particulate matter only. Wow. So what are the costs, Dom?
Okay, so, I mean, we've heard what the standards require, but what if your vehicle doesn't meet the ultra-low emission zone, or indeed the low emission zone standards? Well, then you're going to have to pay a daily charge if you drive through the zone in question. These are the sums per vehicle. For cars, motorcycles, vans and minibuses, £12.50 a day. And under the low emission zone, goods vehicles above 1.205 tonnes unladen weight and not exceeding 3.5 tonnes gross vehicle weight, as well as buses and coaches not exceeding 5 tonnes, they need to pay £100 a day. HGVs, lorries, vans or other specialist vehicles over 3.5 tonnes GVW, as well as buses and coaches over 5 tonnes that do not meet Euro 6 but do meet Euro 4 for particulate matter, also £100 a day. And that will rise to £300 a day if the vehicle in question does not meet Euro 4 for particulate matter. But that's not the end of it. If you fail to pay the ULEZ charge on time, which is generally by midnight on the third charging day after travelling into the zone, then you may face a penalty charge of up to £180. For large vehicles transgressing within the low emission zone, the penalty can be up to £2,000. And remember, all of this is on top of the separate congestion charge. That one applies to everyone, or almost everyone. There are some notable exceptions, whether they meet the ULEZ standards or not. So, we haven't mentioned it yet, but what does this mean for electric vehicles, Matt?
So, you will have noticed a conspicuous absence from everything we've discussed so far, EVs or electric vehicles. The reason for this is that EVs don't have to pay a penny in ultra-low emission zone charges because they don't produce any emissions. They're also exempt from the congestion charge. So this is something for fleet managers to consider when they're working out the models that will provide the greatest economy. The whole life cost, or total cost of operation, of electric vehicles, what it costs in things like fuel, servicing, maintenance and repair over the course of its lifespan, already tend to be lower than those of petrol and diesel equivalents. If they're driving in the ultra-low emission zone, then they're going to save even more money. And what about older cars, Dom?
Well, one of the criticisms of the ULEZ is that it penalises poorer people who can't afford to upgrade their cars. It's a criticism that the Mayor and TfL are aware of and are trying to do something about. To that end, they've announced a £110 million scrappage scheme to mitigate some of the costs of the ULEZ expansion for drivers of older vehicles. They've already been running a similar scheme in the existing ULEZ, and the same principles apply. Grants are offered either to scrap a vehicle or to retrofit it to meet the higher standards that vehicles need to travel in the ULEZ without attracting a charge. It's open to London residents and London-based businesses with less than 50 employees, but only if they have vehicles that don't meet ULEZ standards registered at their address since January 2022 or before. Successful applicants receive up to £2,000 for scrapping a car, or up to £11,500 for vans and minibuses. The exact amount depends on the vehicle in question. In addition to that, the Mayor and partner organisations are offering other benefits to those who successfully scrap their vehicles. These include offering money-off subscriptions for bikes, e-bikes and ULEZ-compliant car clubs. But, Matt, is it working?
That's a great question. A cynic might suggest that there's one major reason why the ultra-low emission zone is being expanded. Money. After all, last year it generated over £224 million for City Hall, about a third of which came from fines. That's money being used to roll out the scheme out even further and to maintain it. So it will be raising an awful lot more money soon. However, There's another truer reason for the ultra-low emission zones expansion, and that's clean air. Although it might be thought that the busier and more crowded parts of London suffer worse air quality than the leafier, quieter parts, that's actually not the case. Since the wind moves air across London, pollution affects the whole city, from the centre to the suburbs. In fact, the greatest number of deaths where air pollution is a factor occur in the outer boroughs. And what's more, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that the expanded ultra-low emission zone will make a positive difference. Between 2017, when the scheme was first announced, and 2022, NOx levels have very nearly halved in the ultra-low emission zone areas. And by going further and including the whole of Greater London in the ultra-low emission zone, it's estimated that an extra 362 tonnes of NOx will be removed from the air in the rest of 2023 alone. And there's been a change in vehicle habits too. In 2017, around 61% of vehicles would have had to pay the charge. Only 6 years later, that's down to just 10%. So what are the options? What are the options, Dom?
Well, the stated aim of the architects of ULEZ is that they want to improve health by reducing polluting vehicles from the roads. However, they wouldn't be too upset if it led to fewer vehicles of all sorts being driven. London's a famously congested city, so if more people leave their car at home, it'll make it easier and safer to get around, both for pedestrians and drivers. Certainly, TfL is trying to encourage people to try other ways of getting about. They're actively promoting walking on their website, with maps and even suggestions that urban hikers might like to try. And they're every bit as keen on cycling as well. They've just opened 10 new cycleways around the city, the largest batch launched at one time, and there are more to come. Mayor Khan has made provision of cycleways one of his key transport policies, and he'll be keen to tell voting Londoners how he's delivered on that. The London Underground, of course, remains an essential part of the transport mix. The trains are the original electric vehicles, after all, and it's even been expanded with the Elizabeth Line. Meanwhile, the famous red buses have had an environmentally friendly makeover. All 9,000 buses in London's fleet now meet the stringent Euro 6 standards, and while there are still some diesels in service, there are also electric and hydrogen-powered vehicles to even things out.
Well, if you must drive, with all the options that London can offer to get around, it's no wonder that many residents manage without a car or a van. There's no denying, though, that sometimes a car can be very useful, and many will be tempted to hang on to theirs for just that reason. However, even here, there are options that won't add too much to the pressure on the roads and generate even more pollution. There are car clubs, for example. These aren't part of the official TfL strategy, but they're certainly keen to encourage them as a way to reduce overall car use. A car club is a short-term rental service where members get access to vehicles that are parked nearby and rent them by the hour or even the day. They can either drop them off at an agreed location or bring them back where they found them once their errand is complete. It means people have access to a car when they really need one without having to actually own one. It also means they're only driving a car when they really need to, rather than using it for journeys that could just as easily be done on foot or by public transport. It's a flexible alternative to car ownership and rather cheaper. Fewer cars mean it's easier to park and there's less congestion on the roads. And if the vehicle is electric, there's fewer emissions too. For longer term use, let's not forget that leasing remains a popular option. Not only can leasing give you quick access to a new, ultra-low emission zone compliant vehicle, whether that's an EV or a newer, cleaner fossil-fueled vehicle or plug-in hybrid, but it can also remove many of the hassles and costs associated with ownership. Things such as insurance and servicing are often bundled in, as are options such as chargers in the case of electric vehicles. All in a simple contract that's made to work for you. What's more, services such as Leaseplan Flexible can be even more, well, flexible? Think of it as an almost like longer-term rental solution. A way for business customers to hire a vehicle, or several vehicles, for any period between 84 days and 2 years. It could be an EV, a plug-in, or even a conventional petrol or diesel car. Or even, in fact, a van. So LP Flex or Leaseplan Flexible could be perfect for commercial vehicles operators who are weighing up their options. Perhaps you find yourself working within the ultra-low emission zone, but not for long enough to make getting an electric van a worthwhile investment. Perhaps you simply want to try out new electric technologies to see how they might be part of your mix. Leaseplan Flexible gives you those options and more. It's one of the solutions that are flourishing as things like the ultra-low emission zone and clean air zones are rolled out across the country. So in conclusion, no matter how much some people grumble, the expansion to the ultra-low emission zone is going to happen on the 29th of August. In fact, in truth, it's probably all happened by the time you listen to this podcast. As we've said, 9 out of 10 vehicles are already compliant, and there's still help available for people with vehicles that aren't. It'll take time to see how effective it's been. We'll need data to see if people's behaviour really changes and whether vehicles do too. It's a bold piece of policy, however, and if it works, London will be a nicer place to drive and a nicer place to live too. And for those of you that have been furiously using the rewind button on this pod for all of those dates and times and stats and weights and measures, you'll be pleased to know that there's an article available for you on leaseplan.com, and there's articles available on the Transport for London website too. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the Fleet Navigator podcast. I'm Matthew Walters, and thank you once again to Dom.
Thank you, Matt.
Please join us again next time when we'll be talking about salary sacrifice.